As the temperatures drop, are the cracks appearing in Reading's season, or are they skating their way back up the table? This is the Tyler's Den podcast, episode number 44. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of the TylersDen.com, an independent Reading fan site and blog. And I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Johnny Williams, our deputy editor. Johnny, hello.
Evening.
Or afternoon still.
Well, it's still afternoon, but it is dark outside.
Barely.
So
yeah. It is. And also joined by Mr. Alan West. Westy, hello.
Yeah, I'm here again. I've woke up from Saturday's entertainment.
It was waving to the masses there, but you won't be able to see that.
Yeah, no.
Sorry, Westy, I'll correct you there. You said entertainment.
Yeah, barely. I'm a bit froggy as well, so I might sound a bit deeper than this week.
Yeah, there's all that singing and all the atmosphere.
Yeah, there must have been that, yeah. Mm. It was a screaming at people, that's what it was.
Yeah. Well, as we've hinted, not the best of games running at the weekend. They drew 0-0 with Bolton. They did keep their unbeaten run going, which stands at a massive two games now.
Take the positives.
Yeah, and, otherwise, what happens? But anyway, so they got a point, but they didn't get a goal. And this, I noticed that Get Reading today did seven of the most boring games to take place at Reading. Do you think that this is up there in your top 10 most boring games?
Was this just this season at Reading?
No, I think it was going back through the Medeski years.
I think you could probably pick three or four of them this year alone.
Yeah.
But let's face it, the first half was dire. It was just, there's not anything to talk about in a bad negative sense or in a positive sense. There was just nothing going on for the whole 45 minutes.
Mm.
And I think the crowd were particularly quiet, and they are in general, but when there's nothing to entertain you on a pitch, it's very difficult to get up for it.
Mm. I think I brought this up a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. Do you remember that season? I think it was under McDermott in the Premier League, where pretty much every game we were drawing 0-0 at half time.
Yeah.
Because nothing happened. We sat in. The other team said, well, you know, we're not particularly eager to do anything either. And it just felt like that. I mean, all our best chances came from corners. You see the highlights and it is all from corners. It was just a really sort of lifeless game. Bolton were dominating the possession without ever really doing anything with it. You know, I mean, everyone sort of saw how good Chong Yong Lee was, but he, you know, was very fancy without a very much end product. But they were, you know, they were dominating the possession. Reading basically were just hoofing it forward to Murray, who had no one around him. Mm. The other outlet was McCleary, who had two men on him at all times, and there was just nothing going.
Also thought that in the midfield, especially, when we got the ball, we seemed to have a lot of people stood round each other and no,
not a lot of people wanted the ball, did they?
No. To be fair, I thought Williams was better this week. I thought he looked a bit more himself. He's trying to make some dynamic
runs. He's getting
runs.
There, isn't he? But yeah. You can't expect him to be fully sharp.
No, he's not fully sharp, but he certainly looked like he was getting back to his best. I mean, it's not all bad. Because, like you said, we did keep a clean sheet. We didn't really look like we was going to get beat.
Mm.
But other than the fact that we looked dangerous from corners and we probably should have scored on at least two or three occasions, we didn't create an awful lot else.
No, and it's difficult because in the immediate aftermath, I was thinking, oh, this is boring, this is, you know, rubbish. But when you sit back and you take a look, you think, well, what were we complaining about 3-4 weeks ago? Reading conceding three or four goals a game.
Yeah.
And they've only conceded, what, one in the last two?
Yeah.
You can say, oh, you know, still conceded a goal, but that's three hours, well, nearly the whole game. So they conceded quite early at Norwich now.
Yeah.
But that young defence has tightened up. And team, I remember listening to Sean Dyche talking about it, and he said, look, if you cut out the goals and you start getting these nil-nils, they're easier to turn into wins. If you've got that solidity behind you.
Yeah.
And the fact that they've now gone two games, a joke to the start, they've gone two games unbeaten, but it's a starting point. And if you'd said before the Norwich game, Reading will get 4 points out of the next two games, you'd bit their hand off. I certainly would anyway.
No, they certainly shored things up at the back, which they needed to do. But I think the whole game was a typical away performance. It was, let's see if we can get them with free kicks and corners, and otherwise just be solid. And I suppose when you're losing a lot of games, you have to do that to a certain extent, but it doesn't give the fans entertaining football.
They had to stop the rot, though, didn't they? Because if they played an expansive game against Bolton and then Bolton and nicked a goal,
could have happened.
And we know Reading aren't great. I know they came back against Norwich, but they're not great about coming back. Yeah. So this was be solid, hopefully nick a goal. And it's when these players get up to full speed, when McCleary's flying, when Williams is flying, when they've got that and they get some more players back on the bench, then they can start pressing. But I think for the moment, I can understand why you attempted to rock up. It wasn't for me. As I said, from an entertainment standpoint, no one's going to sit here and call that a classic.
No.
But it's a point. And at the moment, Reading have been scrabbling around for points. And as I said, four in the last two. I can't complain too much.
The thing is, it looked like a great point if they go and win on Saturday. And playing that way, they might well get a result at Birmingham. You know what I mean? Because they're going to be hard to break down. And Reading have got a goal in them. You can see that even on Saturday. You can see that they had goals in them. But at the time, it's just going to come from free kicks and corners, which is great as long as one goes in the back of the net. Nobody minds. But as for a home, entertaining the home fans that we've said been dropping off for weeks, that's not going to help put bums on seats.
Yeah, Jake Cooper, again, stressing the positives here. Jake Cooper had a very good game. I thought he's a lot more comfortable on the ball than just looking at him you'd think he'd be. You'd think, oh, he's big gangly, he's probably not going to be. He's surprisingly comfortable, and he got himself out of a few jams with ease, relative ease anyway. And you mentioned Chung Gung Lee having a quiet game. I think you've got to give the defence and Ola Norwood a bit of credit for keeping him quiet, because he was the best player on the pitch, quality-wise. And Reading kept him out.
Yeah.
And Craig Davis as well has had a pretty good run. And Reading also shut him out. So
I thought Mills looked pretty good as well.
Where are those decent 45 yarders coming from?
Yeah, I mean, that was incredible. You know, I mean, he was just dropping balls from, say, the centre back out to Chung Yong Lee on the wing, or just in between the defence and the midfield. He was sensational. For me, he was the man of the match.
He was fired up, though,
I thought he was
he?
Very good, actually.
Mills. He was fired up every minute in the referee's ear. That's what annoyed me, though. That's why I'm like, I still don't like you, Matt.
No. He didn't get much love, I must admit.
No, but I mean, you know, Cooper, to be fair, it was Cooper on Mills at free kicks and corners, and Cooper generally got the better of that argument, despite Mills being, 6'4" himself. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, when you've got a weapon like Jake Cooper, I think it is right to use him. But the problem is, when it's our only game plan, sort of thing, and I said, I said after the game, it was pretty much our only game plan was get a corner, get it to Cooper and see what happens.
If you look at other teams have done that in the past. You look at Stoke under Tony Pulis, everyone was like, oh, they're just a Roy Delap long ball corner merchants. And
if it works,
it works.
Yeah, if it works.
So,
who cares?
And at the moment, a lot of people have been slagging Nigel Atkins off, saying, oh, he's trying to do too much for that team or trying to impose things. But if he's playing to their strengths and he thinks this is the strength.
But it's just a bit disappointing that our strength is our centre-back. Our 19-year-old centre-back who's just come.
But Gareth McCleary is one of the best offensive weapons in that team, and he's going to get better, because this is the low watermark for him, and understandable when he's not fit.
Mm.
So I think once you've got him flying and really able to be a threat on the counter.
And Williams.
And Reading used to do that under Brian McDermott. Mm-hmm. They used to all go through the wings, didn't they? Joe McEnough, Jimmy Kebbe, bomb down and break on teams.
I mean, I do think that this is a better counter-attacking team. And I did say before in the last podcast that for this game, I didn't think we would go out and try and dominate the game. Because we saw that at Norwich, we got arguably our best result of the season when we sat in and countered and basically tried to nullify them. And again, you could see that we did that on Bolton. We were happy to let them, they did have a lot of the ball in the first half, but they never really looked dangerous with it, and we had the better chances when we were flying forward again. So I think it is something that Nigel Atkins is going to have to try and reel in, this slow building, this try and dominate possession, because I think patently you've seen from the last two games that we get best results when we're sitting in and counter-attacking.
Yes.
It's just unfortunate that that isn't exciting.
What's worrying, though, for me, and again, it's just expanding what you've said, it is the lack of goals in that team, though.
Yeah.
That midfield five, zero goals between them this season.
No, they're not scoring.
And you're talking about players, you know, international players. I know, you know, you might excuse Oliver Norwood of not banging them in, but Harold Robson-Kanu, Gareth McCleary, Williams, Jordan Abita.
Cox.
And Glenn Murray's only got two in his last 11 now.
Hasn't scored since the start of November.
Yeah, so there's just not a lot of goals, and the midfield needs to be chipping in.
Yeah, and also, I suppose, from the manager's point of view, that's why he's at the sharp chop to a certain extent, because we're not getting goals at the other end.
Well, they know when they go behind, they want to hide into nothing.
Yeah, I think there's goals in them. I just think they're still trying to find their way, and the way at the moment is not entertaining people. Mm.
So it was your man of the match on Saturday. Jake Cooper leading the poll on TylerSen.com, which you can still go and vote at.
Yeah, I think he had a decent game. I think Hector was okay, but he had two major opportunities to win that game for Reading.
Yeah.
Especially that header he missed in the corner. It was easier to score, I thought.
Hector still has a couple of mistakes in him. A couple of Sonko moments.
Does scare me. He's a bit David Luiz-esque, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, I remember one in the first half where he tried to hook it clear and instead completely sliced it back towards Federici. Yeah.
And in the last minute as well.
Yeah. And again, I thought Federici made one decent save in the game when
he was
called into that. Tim Ream. He'd done well. I don't think anyone particularly stood out, but then there was no one that you could say was particularly poor on
that. I sort of gave my player ratings as we put them together. I said everyone a 6, Federici 6.1.
Yeah, that's about right.
Because he made a save, you know?
Yeah. That's about right. Yeah.
No one stood out. No one particularly stood out badly either.
No.
Yeah. It's just average.
And as I said, clean sheet, point, not the worst result in the world. And from that, we move on. So unless there's any other pressing issues, lads, time for us to move on to some news bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Right, welcome back to News Bites. Not an awful lot going around at the club at the moment. Nick Hammond gave a big interview to Charles Watts, is probably the big talking point of the week, where he said that due to financial fair play, Reading aren't going to be particularly big spenders in January. He said there's a little bit of wriggle room, but they'll probably need to sell before they can buy. I don't think anyone around this table is particularly surprised at that news. The other headlines, as he said, there is money available to make the Glenn Murray transfer permanent, but it's going to be a three-way discussion between Murray, Palace and Reading. So it's, you know, any one of those parties can nix the deal, and I think at least two of those parties is going to nix the deal at the moment.
Yeah, maybe three.
Yeah. So those are the main points. I said, you know, contract negotiations are on hold while they assess the squad. Again, probably what people expected. I mean, they tied up McCleary, who's their one major saleable asset. I don't think they particularly need to tie anybody else up. They've got 1 year extension options for James Carrachan and Chris Gunter. But the rest, for the likes of Alex Pearce, Danny Guthrie, it sounds like they're just going to wait. And obviously, they do run the risk if they have a great 6 months of losing them for free. But at the moment, I don't think they're missing out on a lot of money.
No, again, Guthrie is not hardly played, has he, for two seasons now? We haven't hardly seen him. So I don't think he'd be a big loss because we've already lost him pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, you can head over to thetarlestend.com. Will's written a couple of great pieces that collate the entire editorial team at the website and our feelings on each of the players. And there's a poll there as well for you to vote on to see who you'd like to keep or release. So head over to that and share your opinion on that one. Otherwise, as I said, it's been a quiet news week. On the injury front, it looks like Jamie Mackie and Pavel Pogrebniak will both miss Saturday's game. Hope Akpan, obviously still a long-term absentee. Jem Karachan gave an interview to Sky Sports News saying that he was hopeful he'd be back in the mix around Christmas New Year. However, you know, given the amount of false hope we've had with Jem, I think at this stage you just say, get back when you're back.
Yeah, what's it been, 14 months now? I mean,
even more than that.
Yeah, I mean, you almost want to say to him, look, only come back when you are fully ready, because we're not, luckily we're not now in a position where we're desperate for players like him back. I mean, he will be a great addition when he comes back to the side, but you have to say that the side we named on Saturday is pretty much as close to full strength as we have.
Yeah, arguably, definitely.
Yeah, the other big injury blow, Anton Ferdinand, injured again.
Injured after a minute.
Full out of his ages again, did he?
Yeah. Well, no, Pav injured himself going for a jog.
Yeah, going for a jog on his own on Saturday.
Where was this?
I think it was outside Harrods, probably.
I was going to say, you don't jog much on the pitch.
Outside the Bentley dealership.
Yeah, it must have been.
So
I went during Black Friday, was it? He didn't get injured in the ruck to buy a new telly.
Yeah, he was down Tesco's because he's short for a few bob, isn't
he? He was out for a bargain as old pop.
He wanted that £20 off the £5,000 telly. So Anton Ferdinand out for a couple of weeks. Nigel Atkins telling Tim Deller after the game that he didn't expect to see him back for Saturday's game. So, oh well. And obviously, Hope Akpan still out long-term with a shoulder injury. The only other relevant real bit of news is Adam Federici's been named in Australia's provisional squad for the Asian Cup. He's sort of said before, though, he'd really have to think about whether to accept the call-up, because he basically doesn't want to go halfway around the world, sit on the bench, lose his place at Reading in a year when he's got a new contract. So.
Yeah, and I think that could be, well, it's a wise bit of business from him, really. If he's named the first choice, his contract's running out and he has an amazing Asian Cup, then he's going to be very much in demand.
Yeah,
but I think it'll only go if they say you'll play every game.
I think it'd be pointless if you did otherwise.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that said, that's about all we've got in news bites this week. Not an awful lot going around. So with that in mind, no pub chat either. We'll move straight on to a bumper mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Right, welcome to the mailbag. Thanks to everyone who sent in tweets and emails this week. You just heard the contact details, but I'll rattle through them again quickly. For Twitter, it's at The Tarlhurst End. facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End is our Facebook page, and you can get us on email to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. Plenty of ways to get in touch, and lots of you have, starting with Tom Kinch, who sent us a Facebook message, and I apologise because I didn't pick this one up in time for last week's show, but it's still relevant, I think. He says, "Hi guys, really enjoy the podcast. My point is Adkins has now been at the club since March 2013 and he still doesn't feel like the Reading manager. His connection with the fan base is basically zero. When Brian McDermott praised the away fans spending their hard-earned cash on travelling to see his team, you knew it was sincere thanks. When Nigel, rarely, says thanks, it sounds like the rest of the rubbish he comes up with. And don't get me started with his interviews. Has he ever answered a direct question? Win or lose, I'd rather have a manager who connects with us fans."
I think this is a frustration that, just about all the fans have, in that Yeah, he likes to be positive, but when you find positive in something that you cannot find, and no one else can find positives in, then you sort of get a little bit unbelievable.
But Johnny, the positive, the positivity of being positive is so positive.
Yeah, but that, what does that mean?
See, you've missed that quote, haven't you? You've missed that. Misinterpreted what he's saying.
You need that in a poster at work.
Yeah.
No, I don't. What, to fire darts at? No.
The thing is, he's like a politician, isn't he? I mean, I often listen to his interviews at the end of matches. I think, in fact, my friend, Mark Dennis, he said to me this week, he said, I'm going to go and sit over on the West Stand because it seems like there's a better game over there than there is in the East Stand. because there was, I think Lennon was saying it was a great 0-0, and our manager, Atkins, was telling us how we dominated both halves.
I mean, I think Atkins is a Marmite character, but if you look at how, you know, Scunthorpe and Southampton fans, you know, think he's a great bloke and a great manager. Is he possibly a victim of the fact that just the team and the club haven't been going through a great phase, so people are directing it at the manager? Would we really care what he was saying in his post-match if Reading were winning regularly?
I don't know. I think it's nice. I like a manager to tell you as it is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If you sat there and watched a load of turgid performances and you know someone's been poor, I'm not saying get on radio and slate them off, but at least don't try and skate over the fact that there's a lot of cracks all over the team, or tell us something that hasn't even happened. And what he's great at is when we dominate possession and we get beat, he'll say, well, we've dominated possession for large periods. When we haven't dominated possession, he picks something else that we've done okay at. Rather than just say, well, we haven't dominated possession today. In fact, we didn't play that well and we've got rightly beat.
I think he does criticise him a little bit when he has to. I remember, I think after the Derby game, he was saying, this isn't good enough, we can't keep conceding goals and I need to look at things. So I think he does come out.
He said that for 3 weeks on the trot.
Yeah. I think he's a Marmite character. I think you either love him or you hate him.
I don't know too many people that love him.
No. Unfortunately not. But as I said, if he starts winning games, it'll turn around. I said, he can't be that bad of a bloke for just the way that the whole of, you know, the Southampton fan base, the majority of them still hold him in very high regard and things like that. So
yeah, again, if you're winning games, no one cares what you say. Yeah, but it's when you're not winning and then you're skating over the fact that we've seen what happened and you're telling us something different.
Yeah, and I will disagree with you, Tom, a little bit. I do hear him thank the fans quite a lot. I think he does say the crowd were great, they stood behind us, and he does praise
that's a lie. I mean, half the time the crowd wasn't great on Saturday.
Yeah, what did he say the other week when it was so deadly quiet you could have heard a pin drop, and he said the fans gave us a basis to go out and play football. What, they didn't say
anything? Bad football.
The players could hear each other talk.
A veiled criticism.
I thought it was.
Anyway, yeah, very much a Marmite character, and moving on to the tweets again, not a lot of positivity coming out of the fan base this week.
I can't believe it.
I know. Tim Colley says, was there a slight improvement in the back five this week, or is that just clutching at straws?
I think there was, and I think it's going to come with time. I think Chris Gunter, for one thing, I don't remember Chris Gunter doing anything, and that is a good thing because it means I don't remember him making a horrendous mistake.
Very true.
I don't think he got forward to support the left wing as much as as much as Kelly did on the right wing.
I thought Kelly done right this week.
Oh,
whoa!
Well, no, I did want to pick one thing out.
Festive cheer from Westy.
I said to Johnny when I walked in here, the best thing I remember Kelly doing during this match was, did you see it when he got the ball played out to him and he was looking for the cross into the box? And then by the time he looked back at the ball, it had gone out of play. And I thought, I remember that one. Note that one down.
Champagne moment contender.
Yeah, no, the champagne moment I'll tell you about later.
Okay.
But no, I think the back four have been solid. Federici, we know, is a very good keeper. Cooper looks comfortable. That was a bit of a tongue twister.
It
keeper
is.
Cooper comfortable. Hector, sorry?
Try that one at home.
Yeah. Go on then. And Hector looks like he's growing into position as well.
Again, there's plenty of improvement in them too, and I thought for the fact that they've got hardly any experience of championship football, I thought they looked more solid than some of the centre-back pairings we've had over the last 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. You give them a year together, or 2 years.
Yeah. It was interesting as well, when we talk about praising Kelly, it was interesting Michael Hector talking about Stephen Kelly and the role that he's playing in the team. And he was talking about the amount of experience and stuff, and playing alongside him is helping him.
To be fair to Kelly, I mean, you'd never hear him complain when he's sat on the bench.
No. I said, getting a bit of experience in that back four, because we were talking, weren't we, when it was, you know, Gunter, Obita, Hector and Pierce, that there wasn't just a lot of leadership, and at least Kelly offers that, and he's got that, he's been there and done it, so he does offer that. Moving on, Royalty Point says, yet another game, I've come home bored to death. That's now the accepted standards. Why? We can do better. Continuing on this theme, Darren Collins says, simply, we seem to be going backwards. Why and how do we get out of this rut? No money, no crisis. I thought these were the games we were meant to judge Adkins. Now a woeful performance is acceptable, which is laughable. Alex Everson, has there been football more dull to watch under Adkins since we moved to the Medeski? And Hugh Van Isle says, when was the last time you saw a Reading team this dull to watch? I've been going since 99 and can't think of one. Bunch those all together because they're roughly talking about the same things. So just picking apart any of those. First of all, do you think the team's going backwards? Because, like I mentioned, I see this as going forwards. I don't think it's moving forward very fast. They're not out of first gear. But I think when you're slipping down a hill, the first thing you need to do is put the handbrake on. Because you need to stop the slide first before you can move forward. And that's what I think these last two games have been. They've been Adkins trying to put the handbrake on, saying, look, we're losing games left, right and centre. Stop this. So I don't think they're moving back.
See, I think Adkins has been going around the roundabout for about a year.
He's in Milton. He's had a day trip to Milton Keynes.
We know where the exit is, but we just can't take the turning.
Other than that, he's already had the handbrake on before he got on the slope.
He's just doing donuts.
No, I think again, there's plenty of improvement in that side as far as I can see it. We spoke about the players that have come back from injury. There's more in their tank. We've got a lot of young players. There's more in their tank. That team, I think, is waiting to kick on. Now, what's holding them back? I don't know. Is it the manager's fault? I'm not sure. But I wouldn't get too disheartened just yet.
No, and I think there's 2 points as well. Look at what we did against Bolton last year, 7-1. That performance arguably came out of nowhere.
It did,
but it can happen. Mm. But on the other hand, I talked last week about consistently putting together results, and that's another win where we haven't followed it up with another win, if you saw. I mean, and Bolton was definitely a winnable game. You know, we're 2 unbeaten, but can we put together 2 or 3 wins in a row? I'm not sure. We'll have to wait and see.
But that's what mid-tables do, don't they? Mid-table teams don't put 2 or 3 wins together. They win one, draw one, lose one. And, you know, they pick up sort of, you know, 4, 5, 6 points every 3 games. And that's exactly why they end up in the middle of the table. So
in terms of entertainment,
It was bad.
It was bad, but you know, I think with the sort of side that can either lock in and make it a very low-scoring game or go very expansive and make it a very, very high-scoring game.
The thing is, though, would we be looking at it differently if, from some of them corners, let's face it, we could have had 4 or 5 goals from corners. If 3 of them would have gone in, we'd have walked away with 3-0. Would we have come back saying, actually, Reading played really well today? And I think a lot of those posts would change.
I think you would have, and I think you would have said that was a functional win, much like what we said after Rotherham and Blackpool.
You'd have had people saying, oh, we played to our strengths during that match and we scored 3 headers from corners.
Well, you look at Norwich, 2 headers from corners there. I mean, and that was a functional win. A classic away performance.
You didn't have anyone saying how bad Reading were on a day.
And you've got to think about the confidence that the players take from this, because, you know, we can all sit and say, yeah, it wasn't great entertainment. But if you're sat on the training ground this week and you're one of the defenders, you probably got your chest puffed out a bit. You've kept another clean sheet and you're thinking, do you know what? Because bear in mind, these are the same lads that were conceding 3 goals a game recently, getting hammered left, right and centre. Last couple of games we've done, you know what? Norwich, which is in an easy place to go, and Bolton, one of the informed sides in the division. Yeah. Got 2 results here. We could build on this. We're going to St Andrews at the weekend.
Yeah. Also,
let's move forward.
Also, had a very young centre of the pitch, apart from Murray. Other than that, they were all young, weren't they? Williams is quite experienced. I know Norman's an international, but he's not overly experienced. And the other 3 were babies, really. So, if they can do it now, how much can they improve?
Yeah. On Hugh's point, do you think he says that this is the most boring team since he's been going in 99?
I think we had some bad times under Burns and Bullivant as well. But.
Yeah, but they weren't boring.
Well, that's after 99.
Well, no, the opposition weren't playing.
Yeah, those were all pre-99 teams.
Oh, okay.
I think there were certain times in Steve Coppell's early reign where you would think, that's a boring team, when likes a Brooker, a Wusu.
I think we had a few boring games under McDermott when the death knells of his reign were sort of, you know, coming to an end. I mean, I remember, I think we lost, 3-0 at home to Wigan or 2-0 at home to Wigan, and that was just... Yeah, completely.
They weren't boring, those games, though.
We didn't really look like doing anything.
No,
that's a league higher.
So we're not disagreeing with you. Maybe it is the most boring team we've ever seen.
Quite possibly, but I also think this is probably the worst funded and the worst invested in team in that time.
I don't know. I don't want to say that.
No.
No.
Okay. Just me on my own. I'm on my own. Anyway, moving on with the tweets. Gary Woodward says, can't see a decent run coming past Christmas. Players should have been fired up after Norwich and a drab point instead. And then we've got a couple of points on support and attendances as well. Tom, I can't pronounce your name, but Tom says
Wisniewski.
Well done, Johnny.
I'm going for that.
Well done. I'm just calling you Tommy W. Tommy W says, how poor has support and attendance has been this season? Isn't it wrong that it's full in the Premier League, yet in the Championship it's not? And Derek Walmsley says, attendances are dropping fast. Given not much money for transfers, how else might this trend be arrested?
Well, we spoke about this at the start of the season.
Second season syndrome, isn't it?
Yeah. Not only that, I know lots, and we spoke about this before, lots and lots of people that don't want to go and watch Red anymore just because of the fact that it's boring to watch.
Mm.
My mate said this week, he said, I don't know why you go and watch that rubbish every week. He said, you know what's going to happen. He said, you know what the games will be like. He said, I was at home watching Sky Sports News. He said, they went to the Reading game once and the bloke who was commentating on it couldn't remember anything that happened. Which is about right, you know what I mean?
The fans are going to come back when the entertainment gets
back. That's right. Bearing in mind, I mean, for me, example, I got in from work at 2 o'clock. I rushed to the ground. I got there a minute before kickoff. Now, I'm doing it, but a lot of people are going to think, why am I doing that around Christmas? Mm. I must be mental.
I always know the crowds are bad because I can tweet and I get internet on my phone. That's how you know it's a low crowd.
But they're silent as well, and a lot of people stop going since Atkins has been manager. I know that for a fact.
I know. I sit in Y25, and you know, I usually have a sing. I have a sing-along and join in because that's the sort of singing section of the ground. But I had two or three seats either side of me empty and some behind me as well. And you don't really want to sing when it's literally you on your own.
I mean, to be fair, where I sit, the West has been quite lively recently, just because everyone hates Al Robson Carney. So yeah, just someone, a lot louder than usual.
Someone dropped their book rather loudly.
I think that gets me nicely to my champagne moment this week, speaking about Al Robson Carney. Now, I didn't think he played particularly badly, but like most of the others, you didn't really notice him. But there was one point during the game where most of the East Stand noticed this, and I certainly did. He was 10-1 on to win a tackle. And as he see it going to happen, he got slower and slower until all of a sudden, he got there about 2 minutes after the tackle took place. And then the crowd started booing him. And then soon after that, he was substituted. And I don't know if he was ironically clapping the fans as he went off, but I think there was a lot of irony in that. But that is a thing that annoys fans. When you're favourite to win that tackle, even if you're not favourite, he made absolutely no attempt whatsoever to get involved in the tackle. When he should have won it. He should have won it easily.
There were a few ironic cheers as Hal came off. And Lee Crook makes the point. He says, Robson Carney needs to be rested. We need to find some pace from somewhere and better supply for the frontman.
Rested? He's hardly played for a season.
Well, the pace is going to come from when McCleary gets back to speed. And when you've broken your back, it's going to take you a while to get up there. And I don't think Abita's not slow either. And neither is Hal Robson, Canoe, or Nick Blackman either.
I mean, a lot of the questions have been, if you listen to the radio before games, a lot of the questions that get put to AD and Goodin are, why is Robson Carney getting a team every week? Because I don't think during one match this season, he's justified his place. But he continually gets picked.
He's been picked on potential, isn't he? Yeah. He's been picked on potential.
He's clearly been picked on something that he shows him on the training ground.
Well, and that he's shown him games in the past. If you watch a Hal Robson Canoe highlight reel, you will see a quick, powerful player that's got a shot on him, can score goals, can create goals, use either foot.
And it'll only take you 10 seconds.
No. Come on. If you were looking at this season's highlight reel. But in general, let's not do him a disservice. He is a very good player. Mechanically, he's got all the attributes, and this is why he wins the Tarhurst End Underachiever Award.
To be fair, I didn't think he had as bad a game as other people thought. Yeah,
he
put in a good cross. He was running around a little bit, but I mean, I think Jordan Abita had a far more anonymous game than Robson Carney.
Yeah, but it's just that one moment of lack of effort, as far as I was concerned, and I wasn't the only one who noticed it. The whole side of the crowd noticed.
He needs a move.
He pulled out of a tackle.
He needs a move for me. I said it's come to a point now where he's been at this club now his whole professional life, and there's something missing. And it's not that he's not getting chances. He's been played in different positions. He's had a consistent run of games, but it's not firing. And sometimes you just need to change a club.
I think it's all he said. I think it's just his desire and his want, and I don't think he desires or wants anything.
By all accounts, he trains as hard as anyone. I've spoken to players in the past that have known him, and he said he's one of the hardest trainers. He spends time in the gym. He's nailed on. But yeah, there's obviously something that's just not clicking.
I think that always makes me laugh, that comment about he trains really hard. Now, I'd rather he didn't train hard and played really hard.
Mm.
Maybe he's training too much and he's knackered by the time he gets out of play.
It's not that.
Of course it is, I'm joking, but it's his want and his desire of Robson Carney, and I don't think he wants, and I don't think he's got any desire.
Yeah,
he's not showing it. He has got the attributes to be a good footballer.
I hope somebody comes in January for him. As I said, and I would not be surprised if he goes somewhere else, a bit like Mikel Antonio, and goes and becomes one of the best wingers in this league. But likewise, nothing to say he won't, just this is it. This is as good as it's going to get, because he's in his mid-20s now, and he's not got too much room. You can't sit there and say, oh, he's a young player with not much experience for much longer. Anyway, moving on. Ollie Allen says, if we've got the funds for Murray in January, would we be better off going for someone else? Maybe a left back.
Then you've got the problem, who's going to play up front?
Pog.
There you go.
Pog's not going to do much worse than Murray at the moment. Murray's not offering a lot. It's not his fault.
No. And as I said, you know, in that first half against Bolton, it was just give it a punt up to Murray, see if he can hold it up, and eventually we might get something going. I mean, he held up maybe 1 in 10, but that's not his game. He's not a target man.
He's getting more and more frustrated as well, isn't he?
Yeah, because he's got no support. I think he looks better when Cox plays for him. He looks alright then, because he's got someone to take a bit of the burden away from him. Yeah. But I just don't, if they're going to play one up front, I don't think Cox can play up front on his own. Podgrebniak, I don't think, again, he's got no want or desire. I think Murray's a good player. I think he's a good player. He just needs to have the right ball.
On Ollie's point, though, if this is looking, and I think we're slowly, well, I've been saying for weeks now, this is a bit of a dead season, Fred, and we don't think they're going to get relegated, and the chance of them making a playoff run are unlikely. If you're already paying Pog his wages, which, as he says, not, shall we say, small, you might as well play him week in, week out, and use that money. Say, if they've agreed, budgeted £1 million, you're not better off buying a good young left back for, say, 750k and using the rest of the money for his wages. If you're thinking, well, this season's not going to go very far, next season Murray will be, what, 32?
31, I think.
31, 32.
Yeah.
If you're not convinced that he's going to be your striker for the next 2-3 years, I can see the argument.
The thing is, left backs are a premium, aren't they? You don't get cheap left backs. They are.
We've got one in.
They've got a player of the season one.
Yeah, few and far between.
I think long term we need a left back, but short term we need a striker. I think it does depend whether you're looking at the long term or the short term. I think we've got a striker right there in Murray who we can afford, who we've got a deal in place for. Whether he wants to come or whether Palace want to let him go in the end, you know, they're two hurdles, if you like. But for now, I would be spending that money on Murray.
If he said he wanted to stay, you'd spend the money on him.
I'd spend money on Murray. I think he's a good player.
Yeah.
And I don't think you're going to get a striker of that ilk
for that money.
No.
And have him be a success.
I just think it depends if Murray wants to stay here and if Palace wants to let him go. I think this decision is going to be out of Reading's hands.
And let's face it, you can go to the league below now and pay £8 million for a striker. You get Ross McCormack for £10 million. He's hardly scored a goal for Fulham, has he? You know what I mean? So you're taking a punt even on players that have proven the championship. Murray, he's got all the attributes. He's a good player, I think, and I think he will score goals given the right...
But this is what I'm saying, though. Murray's on pace for the same number of goals that Pog scored last season.
Yeah, at the moment, yeah.
And you've got Pog on the books, who's, as I said, making a decent wage. Might be worth spending money elsewhere. I can see both sides of the argument, but I don't think this is going to be a decision for Reading. I think it's a Glenn Murray decision, and I don't think Glenn Murray's going to want to stay around because he's had very little reason to want to.
Yeah, I don't think he will either.
So anyway, we'll see how that transpires. It's not till into January anyway. So I think Nick Hammond said they had 5 games left to make that call. So I think he's got another 4 before they have to make that decision. Royal Hoops is trolling us by saying the Royals could do with a spark. Is Drenta the answer?
The answer is no.
Unprofessional joke of a footballer.
Although
I'm saying that Sheffield Wednesday fans are happy with him at the moment. Apparently he's put in a good couple of games since he's come back from suspension.
Yeah, but he will do.
Yeah, oh yeah.
But is that good enough?
Again, though, this is going to be the argument as well, isn't it? When Joyston, if he comes back from loan, does Nigel do what he did last year and say, I'll reintegrate you, you've got 6 months left, I'm going to get money at you? Or does he do what he did at the start of the season, just say, off training with the kids, see ya?
Well, I mean, the problem is, you can have a word with Royston and be like, yeah, I'm really up for this, I'm buzzing. And then 2 weeks later, it'll just be, you know...
He's out partying with his mates.
Yeah. You know, selfieing whilst driving his car sort of thing. I mean, yeah, you know, I don't know what's going to happen with him. Clearly, he's got all the ability in the world, but right now, we need... You know, we need 11 men who want to work for their place.
The thing is, we don't know. We're not privy to Drenta's influence or in around that training ground.
So it must have been fairly toxic if when Reading had no players and no money, they were still kicking him to
this is what I'm saying. Yeah. Actions speak louder than words. Now, if he was that much of a problem that you had to take him out of it, then why reintroduce him? Is that going to be any better? Wilson Drenta is not, he's not the sort of bloke who's a man of his word, is he? Like you said, he'll tell you how great he's going to be and how he's going to rip up trees and then... You don't see him no more.
He'll be kicking shrubs.
Yeah. And he'll be arguing with a managerial team when they're telling him what to do. So is that good for Reading? I don't think so.
No, I think it's a risk.
And there's no future in him either, Drenta. Mm. They're not going to build a team around him.
No.
And you wouldn't rely on him for anything. So they're going to try and get rid of him as best they can. So there's no point putting him in now.
Yeah. Fair enough. And Talk Reading mentions cup run, question mark. We've accepted we aren't getting promoted or relegated, so should Adkins focus on the FA Cup? Now, I'll say this, we're recording this show before the draw, so we have no idea who we're going to get.
When is the draw?
It's in about 55 minutes. The time is 6:05.
As we record, yep. So we don't know who Reading are going to draw.
On the Beeb.
I'll make my prediction now that we'll probably end up with someone like Derby away.
It's exactly what we were saying at work today. It'd be Derby, Brighton, someone who's going to beat us. You know what I mean? Someone's going to beat us away from home in our league. That's who we get.
Yeah, everyone else is dreaming of Aldershot and Oxford. And
yeah.
No, not for us.
I'm going to say we get a Premier League team at home, but like a really lower one. Like West Brom. Or, yeah, West Brom, Burnley, Leicester.
I'd take that, though, because I think you've got a good chance beating those sides.
There's another one we might get. Burnley away. Someone like that. Someone who's just gone into the Premier League. You can see that happening.
But he makes a good point, though. If it doesn't look like Reading have been involved in a promotion race.
No.
Does Nigel Adkins go gung-ho, or does he do what he did last year and rest players?
I mean, the FA Cup is basically the thing that created Brian McDermott's career when we got that draw at the way at Liverpool and eventually won it in extra time. That goal from Shane Long. Sorry,
magic.
I'm having a few memories. But, you know,
Nutmeg.
It could be the sort of thing that does kickstart not only the team, but his career and gets the fans back on side. Because if we get into the fifth or sixth round and suddenly we are sort of dreaming of Wembley, another Wembley heartbreak, then then you know that could really get the fans on side. I think he'd be a fool not to play his strongest side, especially because, I mean, you look at the Championship fixtures. I think we play on the 26th, we play on the 28th, and then we haven't got a Championship game until about the 10th. So we've got 2 weeks off. In the middle of that is the FA Cup, so there's no reason not to name a full-strength side.
Yeah, I'd like to see him go for it.
Yeah, again, we've seen in the FA Cup, you can get to the final. A team like Reading could get to the final. Millwall got to the final. Wigan.
Millwall got to the semi-final.
This is what I'm saying. So you could win it, because a lot of the bigger clubs don't take it all that seriously. So
I think Pompey Cardiff.
I think it's different. I think if they do end up getting an away tie at a bigger team, like an Arsenal or something, then maybe... You breast players, well, they're certain about the way Arsenal have been playing.
Yeah, you've got a chance there as well.
Yeah, so no.
But the thing is, a good cup run, like you spoke about today, a good cup run can skate over a bad season. Mm. I mean, no one really remembers us getting relegated when we won the Simot Cup, but we got relegated.
Mm.
No one remembers how poor we were in the league when we had a great cup when we beat Liverpool, because we beat Liverpool. So it could be the catalyst to also pick your season up. Because if all of a sudden you have a home game against, I don't know, one of the middle-ranking Premier League teams, you turn them over, then you get on a good run, then that sort of moves into the league and it could have a run away.
Financially as well, with Reading trying to be in financial fair play, that prize money's helpful. It probably pays a wage for a few months as well. So
I'd like to see him go for it.
Yeah.
I hope so. Well,
no reason not to.
No.
We will see who we get in the draw. There will obviously be details up on the tarlhurstend.com before you listen to this.
Now let's predict it then. Go for a team.
They'll get Derby away.
Derby away.
Leicester at home.
Well, I reckon Burnley away.
Burnley away. Okay, you've heard it here first.
Can we get the talking clock on to confirm that the time is 6:05? Oh, sorry, 6:09 now.
We can't all be right.
Okay.
No, indeed. Right, thank you very much to everyone who sent in your tweets. As I said, tweet at the Tarlhurst End, facebook.com/Tarlhurst End. Send your emails in to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. If you do use Twitter, try and use the hashtag TTE podcast. Just makes it a lot easier to find your tweet and I can make sure it gets read out. But thanks very much. Just time to move on to any other business.
The Tarlhurst End podcast. Any other business?
Right, welcome back to Any Other Business. Just before we move on quickly, we did get a late tweet in, which just did make me chuckle. Evan Collins says, is it true full highlights of Saturday's game are available on Vine? Yes. Yes, yeah, is the answer.
Just about it.
Header.
Anyway.
Time.
Right, moving on to our preview of the next game, which comes away at St Andrews against Birmingham. A team who a few weeks ago you would have said this is nailed on after they got beat 8-0 at home by Bournemouth. But since that point, new manager, and they've been doing better. They went on a 5-game unbeaten run, won 3 of those games and beat some decent teams as well. Watford and Forest amongst their victims at St Andrews. But then it came crashing down when they lost to the worst team in the Championship. They lost at Blackpool 1-0 at the weekend. So I'm hoping that Birmingham shows up. But, you know, they're no mugs. As I said, if you're beating teams like Watford and Forest, you're not a bad side.
they've done pretty much what we was talking about earlier. After that defeat against Bournemouth, the 8-0, they've shut up shop to a certain extent. They've stopped conceding goals. What, they've conceded 4 since then?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they've pretty much trying to be solid. So we're trying to be solid. They're trying to be solid. You could be in for a good away game if you're going up there.
It's got 1-0 written all over it, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So again, yeah, they have done better. They're picking up. But you still fancy Reading on their day to beat Birmingham, I would have said.
Team-wise then, do you change much? We're running the squad selector, and as I speak now, the voting's interesting. The majority of you want to change your formation. People want to see 4-2-3-1 return. Otherwise,
what did we play on Saturday?
4-1-4-1.
Was it a formation?
Yeah, just a collection.
Well, who was
players.
The one? Norwood.
Norwood.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Otherwise, not a lot of massive selection issues. A lot of people want to see Jordan Obita move back to left back. But the main thing is, nobody seems to want Hal Robson-Kanu to start. Just 18% of you voting for him. 53% want Nick Blackman in the team. And Simon Cox getting overwhelming support. 95% of you want Simon Cox. And interestingly, Glenn Murray's down to 74% backing to start. So he's lost a chunk of support.
It's interesting. I don't think he'd change the team if he doesn't have to.
No.
I think he'd keep it the same again.
It'll be a third game in a row, and I think that's the first time this season he'll be naming a team three times in a row.
Unless someone gets injured, I think, did it say how Wilson Carney's a slight injury doubt? Then Blackman are coming for him, I expect. Yeah, it's punching, yeah. Yeah, I think Blackman are probably coming for him. That'd be the only change.
I would bring in Cox for Robson Carney and stick a beater on the wing. Yeah. That would be the change I'd make. But,
we can all play for I'd still want to see John a beater move back to left back. I just want to see him there. I think him and Kelly, fine. And then I think you give someone like a Blackman or a Robson Kanu a run of games on the left, because I just think it's a bit his best position right now.
But you don't change a side that's doing well.
Yeah, I think...
No, and I don't think he will change it.
No. But. I was pleased that he stuck with the four at the back, of the two young centre-backs anyway, when Pierce was back, because I thought they deserved an opportunity to show that they were good enough, and I can't argue that they weren't.
Okay, then. Prediction time. What do we think? After last week, Johnny was the only person to correctly predict a draw. He didn't get the score right, though. He said 2-2. How dare you expect goals? Mine, 1-0, was very narrowly off. Technically, it would have been fine had that Lino not ruled out the goal. Also costing me the money I'd bet on Murray 1-0 already.
I did notice on the Bolton highlights, they had done, clearly in paint or something, drawn the offside line.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they stopped it and drew a little line of the defence.
Was he definitely offside?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it was clearly offside.
Yeah. It was
clearly
offside,
yeah. I said it was about as far away from possible. So yeah.
They didn't go for the whole Sky virtual 3D, rotate the camera, see what the ref can see.
There was Sabutio really no reenactment, please.
There was really no need on that one.
But yes, so Johnny gets a point for the correct result. So he moves up to 14 points. And me and Charles on 11 and West East down 10. The three of us had all predicted wins. I'd said 1-0, Westie said 2-1, and Charles said 2-0 Reading. So moving on to this game then. Johnny, as you got the score right last time, we will start with you.
I'm going to say Reading are going to win 2-1.
2-1. What's happened to the 3-1 bandit?
Easy's left it.
I don't think we're going to score 3. But no, I mean, I think away games are suiting us a little bit more right now, because the other team will want to come on the front foot, especially with Birmingham having lost to Blackpool. They'll want to try and appease their fans again.
Westy?
I want to go 1-0 Reading from a corner.
1-0.
Cooper, Hector. Federici.
I'm saying 1-1. I'm going to try and go for a different result. And we will get Charles's thought on the podcast extra. If we record, I think we might struggle to record this week due to other commitments, but we'll do our best to get a show out. But needless to say, we'll get his score prediction ahead of the game. Dave Harris last week, by the way, went for a 3-1 win. Thanks to Handbags coming on the show last week. Always good to have a new voice. I'll be back on in future, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Hopefully as soon as next week, which we'll mention in a minute. But yeah, he predicted 3-1 Reading. And again, how dare you predict goals and entertainment at the Medeski.
Okay.
So those are our predictions. Just moving on to a couple of other little bits and pieces of news and business. Congratulations to Oliver Norwood, who took the Tarlhurst End Player of the Month. Now, Adam Federici got it from the voting on the official website. I think he was second in ours. Yeah, I don't think
he took an early lead actually, and then Norwood got his mates along and clawed it back.
I've not got too many problems with either of them winning it. I thought Norwood had a slightly better month, but I've got no problems with Feds winning it.
I thought it was a month where no one particularly deserved to win it, you know.
Again,
it was very, very difficult. You know, I put together the sort of the bit of writing as to why each person should win it, and I was really, really struggling for
it. I think when you've got a run of games when you've lost 8 or 12 or 8 and 13 or whatever it was. Stupid. And your goalkeeper's up for player of the month. I think that tells you we need to know about the last couple of months.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, congratulations to Oliver Norwood. That's the second time he's won it for us this season. So, congratulations to you.
He's well liked, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been probably one of, if not Atkins' best signing, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah, congratulations, Ollie. Moving on, also a bit of competition news. We ran a competition on the website to win a scarf in Reading colours from Savile Rogue. And the winner was Daniel Hall. So congratulations to you. The question was, Stephen Kelly, Chris Gunter and Sean Cummings have all scored one goal each for Reading. Who did it come against? Johnny, do you know the answer?
You told me this last week. I still can't remember.
Cummings was against Middlesbrough.
No.
It was an away game, wasn't it? That we won 1-0.
No,
One was Wigan. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, Cummings, Wigan.
Kelly was a 1-0 at the end of last...
No, it wasn't. You're so far off the mark. This is why Tullis and staff aren't allowed to vote in this competition.
Yeah, but let's face it, we've had a computer. I remember
Kelly's goal, though. It was in the last minute of the game.
It was. And Kelly scored a last-minute equaliser against Forest.
Yeah.
That sort of sparked the turnaround around Christmas last year, I'd say. And Chris Gunter's goal was in... Do you remember the 3-2 League Cup win over Peterborough?
Peterborough.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Back at the start of the Premier League season. So, yeah, congratulations to Daniel. The scarf will be hopefully on its way in the post. Thanks to all those who took the time to enter. Third year in a row we've run that competition now. So, good partnership, guys. And thanks to those guys. You can follow them on Twitter. Just have a look at the competition article. And the very final point before we leave you, it's Christmas time, you might have noticed. And we will be down the Spread Eagle next Monday to record our Christmas special, where we hand out our annual Tarlest End Awards. It's
our annual Hal Robson Carno Awards.
Yeah, shining up the trophies. They're still...
Pencil that one in.
Yeah, he's still got one game to turn it round. If he scores 4 goals at Birmingham on Saturday...
Have you ever seen the FA Cup when they show you him etching it and engraving it before the game's finished? It's a bit like that, isn't it?
We'd already written it in last year.
Hal's already wrote it in. It's just starting the R. You know what I mean?
We'll be handing out various awards, but the main thing is that it's an open podcast, guys, so if you do fancy coming down to the Spread Eagle in Tarlehurst, it's a stone's throw from where Elm Park used to be. You can relive the magic moments of Robin Friday drinking merrily before a game.
The moments in the pub,
you can. By all means, we will be starting the recording at 7. Monday night football kicks off at 8, so we want to get hopefully clear before that starts. So the recording will start at 7. I'll try and get down there for a bit before that, so probably from around 6:30, and get a chance to meet the crew.
We wear red roses, so you know it's us.
Yeah. Indeed. So,
we love the undateables.
Indeed. So everybody's welcome down. Come on down. I said, have a drink, have a chat. You can chip in your thoughts for various awards, and it'd be good to see a few listeners down there. As I said, that will be on Monday the 15th. So recording will start at 7, so hopefully see as many of you there as possible. In the meantime, that's it for us. Head over to tullisden.com for plenty more opinion analysis. Lots of good stuff going up on the website this week. I will, as I said, hopefully be back with Charles on Friday. I can't say for 100% certainty that we will. We do our very best to get a show out. But if not, as I said, we'll see you down the Spread Eagle. And in the meantime, let's hope for 3 points at St Andrews. Go on, you Ars. It's funny how the crowd's always been.